It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Back to work. Good afternoon and welcome to the broadcast. Yeah, it is a crucial week in the fight against coronavirus as governors of more than 20 states begin to lift the lockdowns this week. Stay-at-home orders are being eased and businesses are slowly coming back online.
I'll stay my distance, but I want to do a little shopping.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott eager to get going again.
We will put measures in place that will help businesses open while also containing the virus.
Texas and Ohio will be phasing in their COVID-19 comeback plans on Friday. New York and Pennsylvania will not be reopening for business until next week at the earliest. There could be a meat shortage in as soon as 2 weeks. Food industry experts worry only big box stores will get enough supply, leaving local grocery businesses without.
We're still asking consumers, please don't panic, to not stockpile, and please take what you need, but still continue to leave some for their neighbor.
That's a spokeswoman for Tyson Foods, which is reeling from the COVID-19 outbreak. Mark Straub runs a food supply business in Western New York.
I can't say that it's breaking. I'm not going to say that we're going to be a little tight on things. Right now, you know, all the product that we have coming into us, we might be shorted a little bit. But, you know, we're getting it out there.
Tyson Foods warns that millions of pounds of meat will disappear from the supply chain as this pandemic forces more of its facilities to shut down. President Trump wants to beef up coronavirus testing. Here's correspondent Weijia Jiang.
In a new federal plan touted by the president, the administration would give all 50 states enough tests each month to screen 2% of their populations. A rapid response program would isolate people who test positive and trace contacts.
We are continuing to rapidly expand our capacity and confident that we have enough testing to begin reopening and the reopening process. We want to get our country open.
But this new plan does not provide specifics about the supply chain or a roadmap for growing testing capacity.
Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie says all the testing in the world is not enough to help us overcome the virus.
It's very important, but it's not the be-all and end-all. It's important, but if we wait until we can test every American to be able to reopen our economy, we won't have an economy left.
So far, just 1.5% of the overall U.S. population has been tested. The Trump White House promises to conduct 8 million tests a month by the end of May. Small businesses having big problems getting loans from the cash-strapped Paycheck Protection Program. Many complain about errors and delays when they try to access the website run by the Small Business Administration.
We have to support small business. If we don't, we're not going to be here very much longer.
Millions of businesses who qualify for these emergency loans cannot access the funds because of high demand. Reporter Tom Costello says time is not on their side.
This is economic life or death. 28 million small businesses are trying to survive the coronavirus. And listen to this stat. The SBA now says it has seen one business fail for good, closing permanently every single hour.
Congress recently approved legislation to shore up the cash-strapped Paycheck Protection Program, which provides a financial lifeline to small businesses hit hard by the pandemic. Overseas, officials in Japan warning that the postponed Tokyo Olympics will be canceled for good if there's still a pandemic next year.
Tokyo 2020 Olympics Chief Mori said there's no chance that the games would be postponed until 2022. In an interview with the newspaper Nikkan Sports, Mori said rescheduling the games in 2021 is a gamble, but that if the world's biggest sporting event does happen next year, it would be more meaningful than any other Olympics ever held.
Lucy Craft in Tokyo, the world-famous Navy Blue Angels and Air Force Thunderbirds, honoring first responders and healthcare workers with flyovers right now. Noam Layton has that report.
The pilots will begin their tribute at the George Washington Bridge at noon, then take over the Manhattan skyline over the Hudson. They're very excited to show their love from up above.
We've been amazed at just the tenacity, the dedication, dedication of our medical professionals. And as you know, it's a stressful time for everybody. We thought, what better way to show of our thank you than dedicating these flyovers to our medical community.
The Angels and Thunderbirds will also be in the skies over Newark, Trenton, and Philadelphia this afternoon. Noam Layden, New York.
Still to come on the Noon Report, a local congressman says contain, don't shut down. The Nourish New York Initiative and parts of Pennsylvania are coming back this weekend. We'll tell you which parts after this.
Good afternoon. We're looking at a relatively benign weather pattern in the short term, but another potent system comes in later in the week with wind and rain. I'll be back with forecast details coming up. We'll look for you in 10 minutes.
All right. We'll look for you then. Thank you, Kevin. New York State recorded 337 new COVID-19 deaths yesterday, and that is the lowest single-day number since March. The state begins to unpause from coronavirus May 15th. Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul in Buffalo says,
I wish I could give you like an absolute date and time and what the protocols are. You will get them in due time, but as you can imagine, this is absolutely unprecedented. We've never had to manage a pandemic that shut down our economy, shut down society, and now we're trying to emerge. But again, the governor coming here less than a week ago was a very positive signal to Western New Yorkers who've been so anxious to reopen. And we will get to that point in a very safe, thoughtful, smart way.
The governor's in Syracuse today holding his daily coronavirus press briefing. Pennsylvania's opening up a release valve on COVID-19 cabin fever. That story from Family Life's Tracy Lynn.
Governor Wolf says PA marinas, golf courses, and privately owned campgrounds can swing open their gates this Friday while maintaining social distancing. The Wolf administration insists the lifting of some restrictions will allow Pennsylvanians to enjoy outdoor recreation for both physical and mental health. Campgrounds in state parks are to remain closed through Thursday, May 14th. Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
Thank you, Tracy. The New York Democratic presidential primary, scheduled for June 23rd, has now been canceled.
In an unprecedented move yesterday, New York State canceling its Democratic presidential primary amid the coronavirus pandemic. Officials say the state still plans to hold congressional and state-level primaries on June 23rd, but without the presidential primary, it'll mean a lower expected turnout and a reduced need for polling places. Bill Price, Family Life News.
All right, Bill, a Penn Yan, New York boy who was banned from going to school after a change in the state's vaccine law has just been granted reentry. His dad says the case sets a major precedent in the fight against New York's controversial rule regarding childhood immunization.
This is a big victory for all of those kids. The families of the most severely disabled kids have just barely been holding on, trying to survive. This case has been followed by people across the state.
That's Carl Schwartz of Penn Yan, the father of Thorne Schwartz, who has autism.
We just look forward to when, you know, school is reopened again. But in the meantime, we're just making do. We're getting along and like everybody else, but still happy to have the hope now that when school reopens, our son can be back to school.
Thorne Schwartz was not allowed to attend BOCES after his school rejected a medical exemption to the vaccine law. Schwartz's own doctor says vaccines for him would have done more harm than good. Last week, a Monroe County Supreme Court judge agreed, saying the state overstepped its authority. Pennsylvania says it will allow non-emergency and elective surgeries as long as hospitals remain able to handle any surge in coronavirus cases. Health Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine.
We released guidance to provide a process for hospitals and ambulatory surgical facilities to resume elective surgeries, procedures, and admissions.
A ban on elective surgeries last month left hospitals with a sizable backlog of patients waiting for non-emergency operations. Geisinger Health asking those who've recovered from COVID-19 to donate blood plasma. The Danville, PA-based health system says those patients' unique antibodies may help others fight off the virus. New York Congressman Tom Reed says mitigation of this virus is best done through containment, not shutting down the state's economy. He spoke to Fox News today.
It's a huge state. We're very rural here. We have a population density much different than the city and a health network system much different than the city, and just an overall area and economy that's different. And so you got to take that into consideration, develop an action plan based upon it, and get people back to work, because the economic crisis is huge, as well as the health care crisis.
The congressman says isolating the elderly and those with compromised immune systems can be done without sacrificing the overall health and vitality of the upstate economy.
The virus will be present amongst us. It will not be taken care of until we get a vaccine. So you just got to recognize that threat's there, and you're just going to have to make sure you rely on the science to keep us safe.
Reed is spearheading 7 regional economic recovery teams in his district, each one tasked with brainstorming ways to help the upstate economy recover. One of the oldest festivals in upstate New York's been canceled due to COVID-19. We're talking about the Steuben County Dairy Festival. It was scheduled for June 6th. Organizers say due to safety concerns, they have scrapped it this year. Festival organizers urging everyone to remember to support their local dairy farmers. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says the state will partner with farmers to process and distribute milk to food banks.
The markets are so roiled. Some farm cooperatives are actually dumping milk because the market can't consume it.
The New York State Farm Bureau says this move will help the struggling dairy industry. The governor was asked yesterday if the state has enough cash on hand to pay out unemployment benefits for much longer.
No. That's why the federal government has to provide funding. Because we don't have the money.
We don't have the money, says the governor. New York is providing $25 million in emergency assistance to food banks so they continue to meet the needs of the needy. Some rural counties in Pennsylvania accuse the Wolf administration of putting lives at risk by opening up trout season statewide. Those counties say it's unwise to allow outsiders to come and fish in the northern tier during a pandemic. They add the decision underscores Harrisburg's lack of understanding about their communities. The worry is in rural counties that people from areas still closed will be drawn to their reopened businesses and import coronavirus. Governor Wolf has a message of support to the graduating class of 2020. Here's Family Life's Terry Diener.
In a tweet, the governor asked others to join him in congratulating what he called an incredible group of young people who got dealt a bad hand and are still keeping their heads up. The governor's tweet was accompanied by a video message in which he stated that the COVID-19 outbreak has made it impossible to hold traditional graduation ceremonies, and it will likely cause seniors to miss out on other important gatherings. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thinking about that class of 2020 for sure. Thinking about sports next, it's the two-minute drill with Sonny Delfiette.
Thank you, brother. At Lanington, Commissioner Bernadette McGlade said that the conference is investigating numerous contingency possibilities for athletics, including playing fall sports in the spring. On a conference call with the media, she said that they have to be prepared if returning to campuses are delayed or opening on time, but with social distancing restrictions still in place. She said it could lead to condensed schedules with more regionalized scheduling and less flying. St. Bonaventure is a league member. The NFL is open to playing a later Super Bowl or eliminating the Pro Bowl if the 2020 season is delayed. The Sports Business Journal reports the league has discussed many different alternatives, including pushing the Super Bowl date back from February 7th to February 28th. Eliminating bye weeks is also an option. The NBA had targeted Friday for players to return to team facilities, but yesterday announced that they're moving that date back until May 8th and possibly later. And two more episodes of the ESPN Michael Jordan docuseries, The Last Dance, hit the airwaves Sunday and relive the NBA Eastern Conference Finals of 1991, where the Bulls swept the Detroit Pistons. The Bad Boys of Detroit walked off the court without shaking hands with the Bulls. The following year, NBA players could represent the USA as Olympians for the first time, and the Dream Team was built. But despite being a high school All-American, college All-American, NCAA champion with Indiana, winning NBA Rookie of the Year, two-time MVP of the NBA All-Star Game, back-to-back NBA champion, and NBA Finals MVP, Isaiah Thomas of the Detroit Pistons, not selected for the Dream Team. 29 years later, that snub still hurts.
If I'm not a part of the Dream Team, because
a lapse in emotion in terms of not shaking someone's hand, if that's the reason why I didn't make the Dream Team, then I am more disappointed today than I was back then when I wasn't selected.
The remaining 6 episodes of The Last Dance released weekly until May 17th. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphiet.
Our very good documentary, worth checking out. Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on the Noon Report, a conversation with a soldier on the Korean Peninsula. We're talking to him after the break. Also ahead, Pennsylvania Congressman Glenn Thompson talks about some of the positive aspects of this pandemic. And at the end of the broadcast, the drive-by joke stand in British Columbia. No, we're not kidding.
There's going to be a lot of pieces to pick up once this pandemic is over. Will the church be ready for the opportunities ahead of us? For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Someday, I say with full confidence, the world will be on the other side of COVID-19. I have very little confidence, however, what kind of world that will emerge on the other side of COVID-19. How long will it take for the economy to recover? How many people will have lost their jobs or businesses? Will we have a stronger sense of national unity, or will the partisan divide be even more pronounced and more destructive? And more importantly, what will the church look like? How many churches will be forced to close their doors forever because of falling donations and their flocks out of work? Not only should Christians care about these questions, we should want to be part of providing the answers. In this time and in this place, Christians should see, both in their faith and in their lives, a call to be part of recovery efforts. If you're sensing that call in your life, especially now, I want to invite you to consider studying with me and the Colson Center this coming year as a Colson Fellow. Originally created by Chuck Colson, the Colson Fellows program is the leading Christian worldview study program. Colson Fellows spend 10 months in intensive worldview study, but let me be clear. One of the strengths of this program is that you don't leave the context where God has placed you. You are learning from where God has placed you, reading essential books, joining virtual discussions with leading Christian thinkers, interacting online through webinars and discussion forums. Every Colson Fellow, by the way, develops a 3-year plan for practical, culture-shaping, kingdom-advancing work in the real world. Because of changes made over the past few years, in fact, the Colson Fellows program is now even more accessible and more affordable than ever. It's almost as if God were preparing this Colson Fellows program for this post-coronavirus moment, and as if he was providing the cutting-edge online learning platform that we'd need for the Colson Fellows program for exactly this time. Colson Fellows join more than 1,500 commissioned fellows across the country who are now connected through our alumni association. You've probably heard of some of the, dare I say, more famous commissioned fellows who are running organizations or making national headlines or writing popular books. For example, Jen Oshman has recently published a book, Enough About Me, Finding Lasting Joy in the Age of Self. That book is the result of her 3 years Colson Fellows plan, and her blog and podcast also address current cultural issues from a Christian worldview. Or people like Steve and Margaret Lindsay, who experienced a dramatic change in calling because of the program. Together, they've launched the Center for Faith and Work in Los Angeles and are helping Christians integrate their faith with their work and become agents of renewal there. You see, every calling is sacred, and we're committed to see Colson Fellows across the breadth and width of these callings and culture itself, from professors to homemakers, filmmakers, pastors, educators, lawmakers, entrepreneurs, and college students. Recent Colson Fellow Julie Hildebrand even said that the program, quote, not only revealed the truth to me, it also helped reveal a truth about me. It helped me discover a love of teaching I hadn't yet discovered. And so now Julie is teaching newly married women at her church and students in leadership at a local Christian academy. You can learn more about the Colson Fellows program at colsonfellows.org. There, not only can you contact us and ask questions, you can also join an informational webinar and learn more about becoming a Colson Fellow. Become an agent of recovery. Join us. Come to ColsonFellows.org. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
Let's check the forecast next with meteorologist Kevin Williams.
Here is your Family Life weather forecast. For this afternoon, variable amounts of clouds, including some sunshine, An isolated shower and high temperatures reaching into the 50s to near 60. Tonight, mainly cloudy, couple of overnight showers, low temperatures 40s to near 50. Tomorrow, a couple of morning showers for some, mostly cloudy, breezy tomorrow, mild, up in the low 60s for most. Then look for widespread showers and rumbles of thunder tomorrow night and Thursday. High temperatures Thursday, mid-50s to the lower 60s.
All right, Kevin Williams, thank you very much. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price. Here's what's happening this Tuesday afternoon, the 28th of April. President Trump says from east to west, north to south, all parts of the country are seeing progress in the battle against coronavirus. He adds ordinary Americans recognize that progress and are anxious to get back to living again.
There's a hunger for getting our country back, and it's happening, and it's happening faster than people would think.
The president wants governors to open their states as quickly as possible, as safely as possible. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp taking a lot of heat for opening up his state.
I didn't order anybody to open their business. I didn't order anybody to go patronize any business. I simply gave people the opportunity that literally were on the verge, many of them, of losing everything that they got.
More than 20 states are relaxing stay-at-home orders this week, including Texas and Ohio. They begin to come back to life on Friday. President Trump says he wants to see schools reopen before the end of the academic year.
I think you'll see a lot of schools open up, even if it's for a very short period of time. I think it would be a good thing.
Dr. David Agus with CBS News says that's asking for trouble.
What worries me is that if we put schools together, the kids come home and they have parents, they have grandparents, they have neighbors, and we don't want them to be an invisible assailant, if you will, to come home with a virus that can harm others.
JetBlue, the first major airline to make masks mandatory for passengers.
That mask requirement begins next Monday and comes at a time when airlines are cutting flights because so few Americans are flying. And that's led to cramped planes, like a recent American Airlines flight from Miami to New York that was packed. And that freaked out flyer Angie Wong.
We were all sat shoulder to shoulder, touching each other, just basically on top of each other.
Masks are required for flight attendants at American Airlines, but not passengers yet. And the crews at that airline say more has to be done to protect everyone from getting the virus. Noam Layden, New York.
Governor Cuomo's launched a new partnership with New York farmers to help get milk to food banks in need. That story from Family Life's Jeremy Miller.
A lot of us have seen that many dairy producers have been dumping milk recently after the coronavirus thinned out the market for dairy products. The Nourish New York Initiative will partner with state and dairy producers and upstate farms to buy food and other products and direct it to food banks across the state. Excess milk at dairy processing plants will be used to make yogurt, cheese, sour cream, and cream cheese to be distributed to those in need. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
Thank you, Jeremy. Pennsylvania Congressman Glenn Thompson hopes several lessons are learned when America does emerge on the other side of this pandemic. His biggest concern, the lack of high-speed internet in rural areas.
That digital divide is being clearly defined for us right now. We're going to have a roadmap when we get through this to be able to go in and achieve one of my goals, one of my visions, and that is to make sure that people that live in rural New York, rural Pennsylvania, all of rural America, that they have an absolute confidence of having that high-speed connectivity just the way they do when they turn the light switch on and the lights come on.
The congressman says this is important, high-speed internet, because
to maximize our ability to, to do telehealth and teleeducation, telecommerce, just to be able to break the solitude of isolation for a lot of people who are home by themselves.
Thompson says greater connectivity is a positive influence, a positive aspect of the pandemic.
It just proves how important it is that we do a better job of connecting all of America, not just urban America, but rural America, with high-speed broadband.
Schools, for one, are struggling mightily to deliver online learning platforms due to spotty internet service, especially in rural areas. With more of us turning to our digital devices to pass the time during the pandemic, counselors are warning that increased screen time may be creating anxiety. anxiety and depression. Counselor Mark Campbell says being on technology 24/7 is not healthy, but using that technology to phone a friend, well, that's a good way to pass the time.
You realize it's not just you. We're all going through it. Everybody's going through it, but we're going through it together, but this too will pass.
This too shall pass. Amen to that. Campbell says going outside, playing a board game, or just getting some exercise, good ways to break up that screen time. This is the Noon Report on Family Life.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes on Family Life. I'm your host, Bill Price. Our guest this week, Hunter Lindblad from Jamestown, New York. He's with the U.S. Air Force, and he's stationed in South Korea. He speaks to us today halfway across the world and in the midst of the coronavirus. Can you tell us what it's like right now in South Korea?
Yeah, absolutely. So, South Korea got hit pretty hard right after, China first got its cases there in late December. January started rolling around. I think January is when we got our first case. Around February, late January, February is when Korea really got hit hard. We're getting towards the end of April where things have slowly, considerably died down. January, February time frame, we were second behind China in number of cases and deaths. We went from number two to, I think we plummeted all the way down, and there's about 20-some plus countries that have excelled way past us now. There's always possibilities of hot spots and pop-ups, but they've done, I think Korea's done a considerable job of squashing the virus throughout this country.
Now, are you guys totally, for the most part, reopened again in South Korea?
No, so absolutely not. I will say this, so Korea went full lockdown where they closed restaurants, bars, clubs, a lot of things for about 2 or 3 weeks. And then they just recently opened back up partially.
So the one thing we keep hearing in the States is how good of a job South Korea did with containing this virus, mainly to the city of Seoul. You guys have kind of been the model for the rest of the world on how to fight this. Where do you guys think you did it right, and maybe where we got it wrong?
The biggest difference, I don't think America failed, right? But I think what the biggest difference is, it's a cultural thing. Here in Korea, right, you're talking about the landmass of South Korea is about the state of Indiana. The population here in Korea is, obviously massive for the size of Indiana. So the biggest concern was the population density, right? So if one catches it, hundreds and hundreds could catch it. The Korean government came in and said, hey, look, let's take the initial steps to squash this now, so in the long run, we're not dealing with this, for months and months and months on end. For the majority of the population of Korea, they listened. I knew once it hit in America, it was not going to go well, and the reason why is because a lot of people don't listen to big government. To me, the reason why Korea handled it so well, it was a cultural thing. And a lot of the things that I see that the U.S. is implementing, right, actually, I don't want to say they got it from Korea, but I would. It looks like they're mimicking what Korea did.
That's very interesting. I would agree with you. I think that as Americans, we're kind of not wired to kind of shelter in place as well as maybe perhaps people in South Korea. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I understand the frustration, right? Because, I'm not a small business owner, right? So I understand, telling a small business owner or someone relies on their job heavily, for income and stuff like that, to tell them to bunker down if they can't work, right? I understand that weeks, months, this is going to take a toll on the economy, but not just the U.S. economy, right? This is a global pandemic. So I think big picture, right, this isn't just a U.S. economy problem. Unfortunately, Americans need to understand is it's not just them, right? It's not just a U.S. problem, right? It's a global problem. The Korean economy has taken a massive hit on this.
What are you doing specifically in South Korea in the military? Can you share with us what your responsibility
responsibilities are?
Yeah, absolutely. So having been here now 4 years, I keep changing jobs just to keep for career progression. But right now I just moved back to the actual wing. Before I was at the 7th Air Force, where I was a contingency exercise planner. Now I moved to, I'm a section chief for plans and programs for the wing. So I oversee a couple big programs here on Peninsula to just ensure the readiness of the U.S. military here in South Korea.
That's Hunter Lindblad from Jamestown, New York, speaking to us today from South Korea. He is today's hometown hero. Join us next week as we search for your home, your town, your hero. It's Hometown Heroes on Family Life.
All right, Bill, thank you very much. Great stuff. Hometown Heroes comes your way every Tuesday during the Noon Report. You can catch it online anytime at fln.org/podcast.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. A strong front is generating some big thunderstorms in the southern plains, southern Mississippi Valley today. And that's our next weathermaker. It will deliver some hefty rain and wind here later in the week. In the meantime, for this afternoon, variable amounts of clouds, including some sunshine, an isolated shower, and high temperatures reaching into the 50s to near 60. Tonight, mainly cloudy, couple of overnight showers, low temperatures 40s to near 50. Tomorrow, a couple of morning showers for some, mostly cloudy, breezy tomorrow, mild. Up in the low 60s for most. Then look for widespread showers and rumbles of thunder tomorrow night and Thursday. High temperatures Thursday, mid-50s to the lower 60s.
All right, Kevin, at the Weather Center, thank you very much. Finally at noon, a six-year-old Canadian kid has opened up a drive-by joke stand in the driveway of his home to help folks cope with coronavirus.
What is red, white, and blue? A sad candy cane. What is black, white, and red? A penguin that's embarrassed. What's the pirate's favorite letter?
Yeah, that six-year-old Callahan McLaughlin, who loves to make people laugh, as you could tell there, his joke stand in British Columbia has become quite a hit in that neighborhood. McLaughlin telling a local TV reporter,
I don't think I have any bad jokes, but my sister has, like, awful ones.
Throwing his little sister under the bus, gotta love that. Callahan zingers, one-liners, and knock-knock jokes are free of charge to anybody who stops by and wants to hear him. Way to go. Six-year-old Callahan McLaughlin. And that's the world we live in. Tuesday, April 28th. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report. Heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.